I think in many people's minds, the Bible's account of Christmas gets all jumbled up with other Christmassy traditions and with the world of the children's storybook, so that Father Christmas, Mary and Joseph, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the baby Jesus, the elves, the three wise men, and Frosty the Snowman all populate this half-remembered story where some baby donkey gets born in, wasn't it, Pret-a-Manger? And Santa gives him gold and Frankenstein and more. It's not that people are stupid. It's that it is a bit complicated and confusing. And that mostly we don't really care. What does it matter if we can't remember the details? Because it's just a bit of fun and it's all for the children anyway. Because the Christmas story is just another fairy tale, isn't it? I want to tell you this evening that the Christmas story is a serious story for serious people. It is history, not fable. And it is world-altering, life-shattering, headline news, not fluffy entertainment. Let's compare the Christmas story to a typical fairy tale. We'll just look at the beginning and the end. How do fairy tales start? Well, some of the best start with this phrase, don't they? A long time ago in a land far, far away. Is that how the Christmas story starts? Well, yes and no. In one sense, yes. The setting for the Christmas story is quite some time ago, just over 2,000 years, in fact, which is a long time by most people's standards. And it all took place over 2,000 miles away in Israel, which from here is a land pretty far away. So yes, in one sense, the Christmas story took place a long time ago in a land far, far away. But the point of that phrase when you're telling a fairy tale is to make the setting of the story inaccessible, so that when you tell the children about the unicorns, and they say suspiciously, "I don't see no unicorns," you can say, "Ah, well, you have to remember, this was a long time ago in a land far, far away." If that's what you mean by a long time ago in a land far, far away, then that is absolutely the wrong way to think about the Christmas story. The Bible is relentless in wanting to make the facts about Jesus accessible to its readers, to show how they connect with the rest of history and geography, the rest of the history and geography of the real world that we live in. We've just had read to us the opening of the book of Luke, a book of the Bible written by this chap Luke. If you are trying to tell a fairy tale, let me recommend that you steer well clear of anything that sounds like this. "Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. With this in mind, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I too decided to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught." That is a rubbish opening if you're trying to write a fairy tale. Luke is more interested in eyewitnesses than in sparkling imagination. He is more interested in orderly facts than in magical happenings. A couple of pages later, Luke is introducing another key character in his book, John the Baptist. And he says that John starts work, listen to this, in the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar, when Pontius Pilate was governor of Judea, Herod, tetrarch of Galilee, his brother Philip, tetrarch of Iturea and Trachonitis, which sounds like a lung disease, but is apparently a place, and Lysanias, tetrarch of Abilene, during the high priesthood of Annas and Caiaphas. Again, terrible prose if you're trying to write a fairy tale. The man is obsessed with precise times and places, and he completely neglects to tell us whether or not John was handsome. Luke could have started his account with "a long time ago in a land far, far away," but he gives us places and times and dates and who's who in the political establishment at the time, so that we can go and check the facts. And historians are constantly checking and rechecking the facts surrounding these events. Just for one example, Luke is shown to be reliable. Luke mentions Lysanias, tetrarch of Abilene, for example. For many years, skeptical historians insist that Luke had got his facts wrong, because the Lysanias that they knew about died in 36 BC, too soon to have been ruling when these events took place. But then archaeologists dug up inscriptions that referred to another chap, Lysanias, who was indeed ruling at just the right time, and Luke's historical credentials were vindicated. We know almost exactly where the birth of Jesus took place. Not the exact spot, but the exact town, Bethlehem. It's still there today. It's a five-hour flight from Heathrow and a short taxi ride. You could be there tomorrow if you fancied it. And we know almost exactly when the birth of Jesus took place. Not actually 1 AD, because the chap who came up with our calendar didn't have quite all the facts at his disposal. But between about 4 and 6 BC, it's quite precise. The events of Jesus' birth and life and death and resurrection from the dead were reliably recorded by painstakingly accurate historians within the lifetime of eyewitnesses. We know from widespread and very early manuscript evidence that our best Greek New Testaments today are to within a word or two exactly what those original authors wrote down. So there's no Chinese whispers-style exaggeration going on down the years. And our English translations are extremely accurate. If you want to learn Greek and check them, you're free to do so. So a long time ago in a land far, far away, well, it was quite a long time ago, and a land quite far away, I suppose. But no, certainly not, if you mean that the facts concerning those times are inaccessible to us, like the facts about unicorns in the fairy tales are. We have the best possible historical evidence recorded by Luke, a man obsessed with details of time and place, and by others no less careful, and accurately transmitted to us by reliable historical documentation. Perhaps you're not yet persuaded that the Bible is historically reliable. Well, don't be lazy. Check it out. I have three suggestions. One, read the Bible. It would be extremely presumptuous, prejudiced, I think the word is, to conclude that the Bible is a fairy tale without having read it. Two, pick up a copy of The Case for Christmas as you leave. It's a legal journalist's personal investigation into the facts of Christmas. He was an atheist when he started looking into the facts and a Christian before he finished. Three, come on our Christianity Explored course in the new year, where you can ask your most basic or your most skeptical questions and get some answers. But whatever you do, don't write it off as a fairy tale, as a bit of nonsense for the children. The Christmas story is no fairy tale. This is a serious story for serious people. A long time ago in a land far, far away. That's how fairy tales begin, but not really the Christmas story. How do fairy tales end? Generally, they end with something like this, and they all lived happily ever after. Is that how the Christmas story ends? Well, no and yes. Let me give you a bit more of the plot. The baby born at Christmas didn't stay a baby. He grew up to become a man, the man Jesus Christ. He was a remarkable man. We've no reason to think that Jesus was handsome, but he was good and kind and brave, as the fairy tale heroes are. In fact, his best friends and his worst enemies had to agree that they never saw him say or do anything wrong at all. He lived a perfect life. He was the most selfless and loving man who ever set foot on the face of the planet. But he did not get the fairy tale reward for his goodness. No dreamy castle to live in. In fact, as far as we know, he never got onto the property ladder at all and spent most of his adult life kipping on friends' sofas. No beautiful princess to marry. He never married. No royal robes or crown, except a crown of thorns. In fact, Jesus' life was marked by suffering. He died young, about my age, about 33, executed as a criminal in the most horrific manner ever invented. Fairy tales can be a bit dark, but no one would have the guts to include a crucifixion. In the final week of his life, he was betrayed by one of his inner circle, abandoned by his best friends, cheated by the courts, tortured, shamed, humiliated, and killed by hanging on a cross. His own mother had to watch him die. That is why when Jesus was born, Mary was told by a prophet that a sword would pierce her own soul too. It's not very magical, is it? Not really a fairy tale ending. Doesn't sound like, and they all lived happily ever after. Except that there are two other things to take into account. The first is this. Jesus' death wasn't senseless and meaningless and random. In one of the Bible passages we heard, it was explained that his name Jesus means God saves, because he would save his people from their sins. The Bible says that every one of us has rejected God and tried to live life without him, and that is sin, and it deserves God's punishment. But like the greatest heroes from the stories of old, Jesus steps in and takes our place. As he dies on the cross, he is taking the punishment that we deserve in an act of heroic self-sacrifice. So Jesus' death was indeed tragic because he didn't deserve to be treated that way. But at the same time, it was triumphant because in dying, he accomplished the greatest salvation that has ever been known, unrivaled anywhere in fact or fiction. Perhaps there is something a little bit fairy tale about the story of Jesus' life and death. And the second thing to take account of is this. Jesus' death isn't the end of the story. It sounds like it is. There's nothing more final than death. But turn the page and there is another chapter. The Bible makes the astonishing claim that Jesus rose from the dead, not from a deep sleep like a certain fairy tale, but from actual physical total death. Death is the punishment for sin, and having taken all the punishment required for sin, there was no need to stay dead. And so he rose gloriously to new life and was seen by hundreds of eyewitnesses and then ascended to heaven to rule as king. And one day he will return and recreate this broken world into a perfect, new, unspoiled kingdom where you and I can live if we are prepared to be his subjects. It will be a fairy tale kingdom, except real and substantial and physical. And I don't know about you, but I expect probably a bit less pink. Do you know for sure that you will be there? You see, there is something happily ever after about the Christmas story for Jesus and for those who are his people. Is the Christmas story just another fairy tale? Does it begin a long time ago in a land far, far away? Well, yes and no. Yes, it was quite a long time ago in a country quite far away. And yet, no. Because the Christmas story is not a made-up tale of inaccessible facts about unicorns. There are many remarkable and miraculous claims in the Bible, but they are claims about the real world, checkable claims about real history, carefully and precisely recorded by meticulous historians and reliably transmitted to us. Does the Christmas story end and they all lived happily ever after? Well, no and yes. No, because far from riding off into the sunset with the girl in his arms, Jesus dies a horrific death on a cross, an ending too brutal to have been invented by any spinner of fabulous tales. And yet, yes, because Jesus rose from the dead to live literally happily ever after, and he offers to write that ending to our story, whatever has been written on the pages of our lives so far. If the Christmas story reminds you at all of a fairy tale, it's not because it's made up. It's because all the world's fairy tales are pale imitations of this story. This is a serious story for serious people. It is true, historical fact, and yet more wonderful than anything that you or I could have invented in our wildest imaginations. Will you let it change your life this Christmas?